All right, nice to have everyone back with us as we talk some baseball with you, as I like to say, and it's something that we enjoy doing. Let's face it, baseball is our respite. It gives us our entertainment and a little bit of normalcy. So we have two of our good friends on today. One is the captain, Ken Korak, who, of course, is the lead voice of the Oakland A's on their radio network and has been a good friend of mine for, about 25 years now. And the other is a good friend, and I wouldn't be here today without his help, and that is my good friend Joe Salvatore, who previously was working at KCBS until a couple of days ago, and things have happened there, which Joe is going to tell us about. But I definitely wanted to have you guys on and to celebrate a little bit. As I said, in the Bay Area, we have so many great baseball fans, and I did the shows over in Oakland for so many years with you guys, and I thought part of our show, 2002, a year the Giants ended up going to the World Series, we could have had a Bay Bridge World Series. And I said, let's talk a little bit about 2002 on the A's side and give the A's fans a little bit of something to remember. So first of all, Captain Ken Korak, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm well, Marty, and, you know, Joe and I are both alums of KCBS, I guess, now, but it's great to be with you, and it's great you're doing these shows. Like you said, I think you're performing a really good service for the baseball fans in the Bay Area.
And, Joe, we're glad to have you, and, of course, my background with Joe when I started in 1996, I didn't know what I was doing. I went down in the clubhouse, I sat in Lee Smith's chair. What did I know? I was doing an interview, I didn't know how to do anything. But Joe was working for a number of networks then, including AP, UPI, and everyone else in the world. And Joe Salvatore took me aside with a lot of patience and taught me how to behave in the clubhouse, how to do the interviews, how to send them over the phone lines in those days. And as I tell fans, I wouldn't be where I am today without the patience of Joe Salvatore. So, Joe, it's nice to have you with us and glad to have you here to talk a little baseball with you.
Yeah, it's good to be here, Marty, now that I can officially be on your show again.
So what happened? Obviously, we've read with furloughs and layoffs and things happening, and as I said, you and I go back to the Coliseum in 1996 when I first met you, but you've had a long career in sports broadcasting, and part of it came to a close this week. What happened?
Well, I was, as many people, millions of people are right now in this country, affected by the coronavirus pandemic. And my job was part of that. And I was told a couple of days ago that it was being eliminated, but not by performance, but by this pandemic. And, you know, it's still kind of a shock, just like anybody who's gone through this. I was with KCBS for 23 years. We did the weekend sports updates for the last 15 of those 23. So it was a long time, but I had a good run. Can't complain. I could, but, you know, I met a lot of, worked with a lot of great people at the station, and, you know, I'm going to miss them from that perspective, but I'll still be around. I'll still be in press boxes and still trying to absorb everything that we see. Hopefully we will see some baseball this year. But the main thing right now is, you know, my kids are healthy, I'm healthy, you're healthy, and that's the most important thing.
All right, Joe with us. Joe, bring the fans up to date a little bit on you and I. And I alluded to it when I first started, you know me, coming out of the criminal law world, and someone said, hey, why don't you try to do a show on the radio? And I had no idea what I was doing. But you took time with me and showed me the ropes back there, starting in 1996 until I started the pregame show in 98.
Yeah, it's exactly what had happened. And, you know, Marty, obviously a very intelligent guy, picked up on it pretty quickly of how the business worked. And as Marty mentioned a few minutes ago, back in those days, we didn't really have the digital technology that we do now. And when I was working for radio networks, I would go down and get interviews after the game, and then we would cut the interviews up into what they call cuts, where you would have a tape deck and you would, you know, find the sound bite you wanted and kind of marked down the numbers on the counter where it was. And then I had a telephone that at that point I had kind of advanced to a phone with a thing on the side that you could plug in and send audio down and turn off the phone volume so that people couldn't hear you on the other end talking or whatever. But I remember I sent you down, Marty, to do some interviews in other, like the other clubhouse, so we could split the clubhouses. And like I said, you picked it up pretty quick. And like you mentioned, by 1998, you were doing the pregame show for the A's.
Well, it was nice, and you filled in for me so many times with the births and weddings and graduations and bar mitzvahs and everything else. Whenever I couldn't be there, you filled in for me, so I appreciate it. I'm glad to have you on the show today. Captain Ken Korak. Captain, remember those days when we first started with Joe?
Well, you mentioned 1996, and that was my first year with the A's, so that's as far back as we go. And I know Joe was really instrumental as far as you were concerned. And one thing I've always enjoyed was seeing Joe in the press box. And he was a constant. I'm glad to hear that, as he said, he's going to be around when baseball resumes.
Well, I'm glad to have you guys with us. And I asked, as we've done on the show a few times, I always say, did this with Vinny last week, Ken. I said, give me your favorite year, so to speak, of broadcasting Bay Area A's baseball. And he came up with 2012, and we went through that last week on the show. And I asked you the same thing, and you came up with 2002, which was a very magical year. We almost had the Bay Bridge World Series again. But why 2002 for you? The obvious one, I think, is going to be the winning streak.
Yeah. Well, it's a tough choice for me, and I don't know that I can even quantify the best year because the A's have had so much success. 10 postseasons during the time that I've done the game, Marty, and you were around for several of those, as your listeners know. But 02 was obviously the winning streak. And, of course, Michael Lewis's book and then the Moneyball movie. And parenthetically, I got a check from Sony Pictures yesterday, Marty and Joe. Residual check for $19, which is like the biggest one I've gotten. Normally, it's like $10.12 or something like that. But it was remarkable. Of course, Bill was still around very much, doing an incredible job on the air. And we've always said the punctuation to Bill King's career was Hatterberg's home run to win the 20th game. But to have that streak build, and of course, all the storylines have been pretty well chronicled, the fact that after the 01 season, and I've always thought, I think Marty and maybe Joe, you would agree with this, that the 01 club was one of the best teams in baseball over the last 20 or 30 years not to advance in the postseason. We always thought that club could have won a World Series, but obviously after that year, Jason Giambi and Johnny Damon and Jason Isringhausen leave as free agents. That, of course, lowers the expectations going into the 02 season. They got off to their traditional very slow start. They got hot, as they normally do, midway through the season and in the second half, and then the remarkable run to win 20 straight games. And there were so many storylines, even footnotes to that. People kind of forget now, it's hidden in the aftermath, there was a real serious threat of a work stoppage. The A's had been on the road and had built this streak on the road. Then they came home to play a three-game series against the Minnesota Twins on a Friday night, and then kind of a weird two-game series against the Royals on Labor Day, a day off Tuesday. The 20th game was on a Wednesday night. So anyway, there was a day off before the Friday night game, and even at that point, there was some question whether there would be baseball, or maybe this incredible streak the A's had would be a mere footnote in history. But they worked that out, and so there was a great sense of relief even that there was baseball when the A's played the Twins on Friday night. I remember after the ninth inning saying something like, we have a celebration of baseball here at the Coliseum, because that was certainly in doubt at that point.
Boy, Joe, you were there. Obviously, I was there, too, to see it. Your recollections of the pitching staff, I mean, Zito, Cy Young Award winner that year, Corey Lytle had the scoreless inning streak, Hudson, Mulder, Tejada with the home run. Your recollection, because you and I saw it basically sitting together watching that thing happen.
Yeah, it was pretty amazing. And as Ken mentioned, the slow starts, which still kind of creeps into the A's seasons and even recent years. They've had slow starts and had to pick it up in the second half. But that season in particular, you know, the thing that people don't remember when that streak started, the A's were like 4.5 games out of first in the West, and they were behind not only the Seattle Mariners but the Angels at the time. So they were playing good baseball going into that streak, but they weren't exactly holding down a playoff position at that point in mid-August. So I think that also gets kind of lost in the shuffle that the A's were not exactly leading the division or being the wild card leader at that point when the 20-game streak started. But it was certainly amazing. And as Ken mentioned, I do remember that threat of the work stoppage right before that homestand against the Twins over that weekend. And that was a big deal at that point. But that whole series with Minnesota and the walk-offs by Tejada going right into the game against the Royals on that Monday were simply amazing.
Boy, you know, thinking back to, of course, Ken Korak with us, Joe Salvatore, and talking about 2002 with the A's at the Coliseum in an amazing year. And we think about, you know, as Ken points out, Tejada, Giambi, and, you know, all the great players that they had in those days. But think about, you know, Art Howe managed. Ken Maka became a manager, and Mike Quadi became a manager. They had three managers, and maybe I'm overlooking another one. But they had three managers on that staff as well.
Well, and then the next year, of course, Art was gone to the Mets, and Ken Maka took over in 2003. And Maka's bench coach was Terry Francona.
Right.
And we know that he's gone on to have a Hall of Fame career. And the, you know, one of the things that Joe mentioned is so true, the fact that the A's had nothing locked up, even as the winning streak was in progress. They couldn't shake the Angels. And that might have spurred the A's on even to greater heights. And obviously the Angels had a great run in the postseason that year as a wild card team, but the A's wound up with 103 wins and the Angels had 99. So as great as the A's played to win 103 and have a 20-game winning streak, they only won the division by four games that year.
Well, it ended on a Friday night in Minnesota, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
And I remember after winning 20 straight and setting the record, in the American League, I said to myself, that's enough. You know, let's take the pressure off and get ready for a playoff. And they did lose, I think it was Hudson, if I'm not mistaken, maybe on a Friday night in Minnesota.
No, Hudson, well, Hudson pitched the game against the
Kansas City.
It wasn't Hudson.
Right.
Yeah, he pitched the 20th game, right?
Okay.
Yeah, and he didn't get the win, which was a shocking development because it looked like that game was over in the third inning. Hudson also started the first game of the playoff series against the Twins. The way the A's had it set up in the division series, they went Hudson, Mulder, Zito, and Zito pitched the third game, and then Hudson pitched game four, which was a disaster for the A's. They unraveled defensively in the fourth inning, and then in the fifth game at the Coliseum, Mulder started that game for the A's against, I believe, Brad Radke that day at the Coliseum.
Yeah, Corey Lytle on September the 6th lost 6-0, and that's when the streak ended at 20 games. Well, an amazing year, and as Ken, as you said, Minnesota knocked the A's out of the playoffs. The Giants went on to beat Atlanta, beat St. Louis, and then it was the Angels, as you guys described. The Angels, that was the team that ended up in the World Series against the Giants in 2002, but an amazing year. What about Bill King for both you guys? You know, this was one of those years for Bill, and you know, you've written the book, Ken, about him, a fabulous book. Bill, that year and the streak, I don't know, it's just thank goodness he could be part of it.
Well, I did, and I wrote one of the chapters in the book focuses on the winning streak, and people have heard me talk about this, and as I said, I wrote about it, but it really speaks to the class of Bill King and his generosity and what a wonderful broadcast partner he was. The only reason you hear me on all those highlights of the walk-offs, especially Tejada with the home run off Eddie Guardado for the 18th game and his single to center on Labor Day against a five-man infield of the Royals with Tony Pena as their manager, the fact that Bill was scheduled to be on vacation over Labor Day weekend, something he had planned long before early in the season. And his friends, and for good reason, people are saying, Bill, you've got to cancel your vacation and come back because you should be on the air in the ninth inning of these games in case something really dramatic happened. And people had every right to say that. He would have had every right to say, you know what, this is so historic that I think I should be there. I want to do the games and be part of history. But Bill kind of stuck to his plans. And I remember talking to his daughter, Kathleen, and she said, you know, those games are Ken's. I made this commitment. I'm going to honor that commitment. And I did the games, the 16, 17, 18, and 19, with Steve Bitker. And that just shows you the kind of person that Bill King is. I owe him so much for the 10 years we spent together and all those great times and as a partner and as a friend. But I think that's a great illustration of, you know, the class that he had as well.
Joe Salvatore, yeah. Your thoughts on Bill King and the streak?
Well, I was just going to say, I do remember that as well, that, you know, Bill did not come back for his, did not take those games away from Ken. He had, like you said, it set up his vacation, and that's the way it was. And we all know there are a few play-by-play men over the years who would have said, nope, I'm taking those shifts. Those are my schedules now, and I'm going to be the one who does the historic calls. But that was never Bill's big thing. Bill never looked for, as you both know, adulation or anything of that nature. And Bill had some of the great calls that year. And I actually found some of those calls online about a year or two ago. And I went back and I listened to them. And it's just amazing to hear him again. And, you know, anytime I get to hear Bill do calls of not only the A's, but his Raiders time or Warriors time, it's always a special moment to go back. It's, you know, either your childhood listening to him on the radio or just, you know, hearing him walking by the broadcast booth in the press box to be able to hear him when he was broadcasting. It was always such a thrill.
Well, great to talk with you guys. Well,
I just wanted to add this, Marty.
Yes, please.
That it was such a beautiful thing. It was such a beautiful thing and so fitting that when Bill came back, he got to call Hatteberg's home run to cap it all off in the 20th game, and that call has been immortalized in the Moneyball movie. So I just thought that was such a fitting and wonderful thing that he had the chance to do that.
Well, I'll never forget that game. The A's were up 11-0. And I felt badly for Paul Byrd. I did. I felt bad. I said, boy, they're killing this guy. And then before you knew it, they tied it up. And, of course, Hatteberg hit the home run and the movie was made. Wow. What a moment. I'm glad you both could bring us back to that. That's what this show is all about, and that the fans can sit back and remember these wonderful baseball moments. There'll be more. We just have to be patient. This week we lost a couple of people. And both you guys knew them well. One, a longtime employee at the Coliseum, Harold Miller, who was in charge of events and security and different things like that. And I knew Harold for many years, passed away at age 90. And also Ed Farmer, a broadcaster for the Chicago White Sox, passed away this week. And Ken, I know you worked with him quite a bit, and Joe and I knew Ed Farmer. And the other, not doing well, and we love him, and I always want to mention his name, is Chester Farrow, one of the original employees at the Oakland Coliseum. I know he's fighting a battle right now as well. So I'll throw it to you guys and start with you, Joe, on Harold Miller. Your thoughts about him?
Well, Harold was one of the nicest people that you could ever run across. I never heard him say a negative thing about anybody. And, you know, I got to know Harold over the years, first, of course, with baseball, but he also did a lot with the Warriors and the Raiders. And if my memory serves me right, he was the second person hired by the Coliseum complex when it was built back in 1966. So he had a long time, long run with the Coliseum, but always happy, always thrilled to see you. The thing that I've noticed that was interesting, I posted the Twitter link of his passing that the A's had posted a couple of days ago, and the comments that were on the posting were a lot of people from out of town. So a lot of out-of-town reporters expressing their sadness over his passing and what a great man he was. And I think that shows a lot about Hal, was that he was loved by people, not only seeing him on a daily basis, but people that saw him when they came in as a visiting part of the media.
Ken, your thoughts about Harold Miller, and then pick it up with Ed Farmer. He was a special friend of yours as well.
Well, thanks, Marty. Yeah, Harold was just a wonderfully nice man. He always had a story. And like Joe said, you always look forward to seeing him. And he always looked forward to seeing everybody who came into the press room. So he was a fixture there for over two decades. And he had always had a story to tell. He really liked golf. So we had a little bit of a link there in talking about golf and his exploits on the golf course. So he will really be missed. He was someone that you just always look forward to as soon as you walked in the door, walked into the press room. And Ed Farmer passing away on Wednesday night, Marty, for many years, 28 years, he was full-time on the White Sox broadcast. And most recently, after John Rooney left, after the Sox won the World Series, John went to the Cardinals. Ed became the lead voice on radio, had a very good career as a pitcher, pitched for a million teams, made the All-Star team for the White Sox in 1980. And his last big league game, he pitched for the A's. He pitched a handful of games for the A's in his last season in the big leagues. And it was just by chance that we got paired together on the White Sox broadcast in 1992, almost literally 28 years to the day is when I did my first major league cast. And I was the third man in the booth, and my assignment was to do one game a week, and that's all I did. So I commuted wherever the White Sox played every weekend, did one game, and as I've said and been on a couple of shows before, prior to your show here, Marty, Ed was my tour guide around the American League. I had only been to three or four stadiums in the league, had never done a major league game before that year. And so I didn't know where the clubhouses were. It could have been really intimidating in a city you've never been in, on a brand new station you've never worked for. They had a good sized network back then, but not knowing where the clubhouses or the press, not knowing anybody. And Eddie took me around, and we had a great time. I thought we had really good chemistry on the air, and you know, we did roughly 100 games together, maybe a few less than 100 over those 4 years, but an unfit, forgettable experience. Not only to share the booth with him, but spend time with him. He was a baseball encyclopedia, as you guys know. And whenever he said something about a player, I would take it to the bank. He had this incredibly deep and reservoir of knowledge about the game and also about all the players as well.
Mm. Joe, your thoughts on Ed Farmer, briefly?
Well, Ed, as Ken said, great guy. One thing that I know you guys also, you mentioned golf with Harold. Ed loved to talk golf also and played golf as well. Very nice man. Always, again, someone that was very upbeat and always interested in talking. Did love to chat with you, that was for sure. And I'm going to miss seeing him when the White Sox come into the Coliseum.
Yeah, he was, as I like to say, he was a good man. And if that's what you say about someone, that's all you have to say. He was a good man, and I appreciate everything he did for you, Ken, and what he did for baseball as well. So life does go on in this crazy time that we're living in right now. So lost two this week. And also today is the birthday of one of your cohorts, Ken Korak, and that is Ray Fossey today.
Yeah, 73 today, and I think it's also his wedding anniversary. I'm not about 95% sure of that, too, right, Joe?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
He got married on April 1st, 65, maybe, somewhere around there. So, yeah, I believe it is his anniversary.
Right. So, Ray has been great. You've had him on, Marty, so many times.
I love Ray.
And I know how much it's meant, you know, like when I mentioned about Ed and the reservoir of information. I mean, Ray goes back, you know, so many years. I mean, when he was a number one pick as a teenager by the Indians and spent all those years in the big leagues, and he's really a student of the game, too. There's no one that I've ever known as an analyst, especially a former player, who studies the game and still takes notes and talks to people and gets really involved with the sport he's covering. And, we've had a great time together all these years.
Well, happy birthday to Ray. And I'm one of the few that can ask him about the moment, the All-Star game moment.
I know.
I can, and you know, with Pete Rose and the whole thing. So I love Ray, and he's Jim Palmer, Hawk, and Ray, the three best storytellers in baseball. Hey, guys, it's great to have you on. I know the fans really appreciated it. It's a good discussion of the love of baseball that you guys have and your remembrances. I look forward to doing this again. And, Joe, you're welcome anytime. We're going to figure out some little spot for you so you can be on the air and that all your fans can hear you as we go through this these next few months and see where things end up. So I appreciate both of you being on today.
Well, thank you, Marty.
Thanks, Marty. Really enjoyed it. Thank you,
right.
Joe, too.
All Thanks, right.
Ken.
That is Ken Korak, Joe Salvatore. More coming up, KMBR 680, 104.5, right after these messages.